Well, the virus has now killed more than 100 people in China, and new cases have been confirmed around the world.
So you don't want to frighten the American public.
France and South Korea have also got evacuation plans.
But you need to prepare for and assume.
Strongly warning Americans to avoid all non-essential travel to China.
That this is going to be a real serious problem.
France, Australia, Canada, the US, Singapore, Cambodia, Vietnam, the list goes on.
Health officials are investigating more than 100 possible cases in the US.
Germany, a man has contracted the virus.
The epidemic is a demon, and we cannot let this demon hide.
Japan, where a bus driver contracted the virus.
Coronavirus has killed more than 100 people there and infected more than 4,500.
We have to prepare for the worst, always, because if you don't and the worst happens.
War Room, Pandemic. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Mr. President, my name is Bruno Lozano, mayor of the city of Del Rio, Texas, and I am pleading and requesting with you to please put a halt to any measures regarding the release of immigrants awaiting court dates into the city of Del Rio and surrounding areas. We do not have the resources available to house and accommodate these migrants within our community. I will have no choice but to use the extreme measure under the emergency declaration as the mayor of the city of Del Rio, Texas, to refuse the entry of migrants awaiting court dates into the city of Del Rio. If you do send these individuals into our community, we will be forced to make a decision to leave them without resources under these dire circumstances. I am asking to please stop. Please make another plan for this federal issue. If you're going to allow these individuals into our community, I respectfully ask that you provide the means and the supplies necessary to accommodate them safely under these extreme circumstances. Due to the crisis, we cannot provide these supplies. We are asking for supplies, water, and prioritization of equal distribution of electrical power in our community. AEP has given us an update that ERCOT has given the authorization to prioritize Eagle Pass and Del Rio, Texas. We do not have a timestamp as to when we'll be getting power again, and we cannot be guaranteed that it will be consistent. We have been outsourcing dialysis treatments for our in-need persons in our community. We have had to relocate the elderly who are in need of power for oxygen tanks. We are completely and utterly spread thin with resources for our own community. With the extreme weather conditions and icy roads, we are limited with what we can bring into our community. I am in constant communication with other border mayors who have immediate concerns regarding the migrant population in our communities. Our nonprofits, our churches are running thin with resources to provide to our very own citizens. Additionally, we have been burdened with the inadequate communication systems throughout the entire area, which has impacted our ability to respond and coordinate limited resources and distribution. This administration has taken a firm stance on COVID-19 protections for Americans. I am asking you to ensure the health and safety of all of our taxpaying citizens along the border are treated with the same urgent consideration. Releasing the migrant population without any COVID-19 protection protocols is undermining your commitment to the stance against COVID-19. Local resources have been utilizing municipal buildings to not only house the needs of displaced citizens during the inclement weather, but to also facilitate the vaccinations of residents. I cannot mix the migrant population with Del Rio residents that are extremely vulnerable and have been displaced due to the extreme weather that has not improved. We may be a small town that is off of your radar, but we have a community of 50,000 people who need your attention. We are requesting that you please listen and that you please come through. Thank you, Mr. President.
This significant surge coming after President Biden ended Donald Trump's so-called Remain in Mexico policy, requiring asylum seekers to wait there for their court proceedings. Since then, many of those tent cities along the Mexican border have emptied out as people start streaming in. We were there when a bus of 56 asylum seekers arrived at Casa Elitis, a Catholic charity shelter in Tucson. Men, pregnant women, and children stepping off the bus with only what they could carry. This father, who asked that we not show his face, traveled to Mexico from Brazil with his wife and three young kids before crossing the border.
Would you have tried to do this when Donald Trump was president?
Definitely not. Definitely. We had the chance, you know, the same violence that is going on today was there last year. We used to watch the news, and I definitely won't do this.
So did you come here because Joe Biden was elected president?
Basically. The main thing was the violence in my country. And the second thing, I think, was Joe Biden.
That's just up in your grill. Now, here's the key part of that. We're going to get to Andrew Torba, the CEO of Gab in a second. He's got a plan, an America First plan. But Raheem, the first individual was the Democratic mayor, the young Democratic mayor of Del Rio, Texas, mm-hmm. right? This is where Trump's been winning. This is the reason that Donald Trump has been winning among working class Hispanics. The great realignment, ladies and gentlemen, around populism is about what that Democratic mayor is talking about. He's pleading. And this is what we've been saying from day one. The entire burden of this is going to fall on working class people on the border and then throughout the rest of the country, because every town's a border town. But you see, he's pleading. He says, our citizens can't do this. We don't have the facilities. We don't have the resources. We're stretched. We've got power problems. We've got all this other stuff. And now you're putting this open borders. It's going to destroy us. You've got to stop. And then you have Martha Raddatz. Hey, she ain't from Breitbart. She's not from the War Room. She's not Gateway Pundit. That's ABC. It's Stephanopoulos' Sunday show sends her to the border. Would you have done this on Trump? Absolutely no way. Why are you doing it under Biden? Well, because, you know, Biden, we're doing it because of Biden. That summarizes it. And I want to thank Denver, the team at Real America's Voice, and, of course, Master Cameron Wallace for putting that together and digging that up over the weekend. That you don't need to watch anything else. That summarizes it right there. The working class people, and this guy is a Democrat. He's not some right-wing Trump proponent. And you got Martha Raddatz, who's part of the mainstream media, and her eyes are wide open. By the way, coming off the buses, pregnant, small children, all of it. The burden is going to fall on the folks in this country that can least afford it. It's so obvious, and they don't care. They don't care. This is 2015 all over again, Mr. Raheem Kassam. You've seen this movie before in Germany and in Europe, did you not, sir?
Well, let me just come back to the mayor there. That was Bruno Lozano, right, in Del Rio. Let's go back just 3 years to when Mr. Lozano was first elected. He openly ran on a platform against Donald Trump. He said that Donald Trump's rhetoric towards migrants, migration, and border towns was unacceptable. He said that his policy was incorrect. Saying border towns would have become cesspools of violence was incorrect. So I think the inhabitants, voters...
By the way, he had his great awakening, did he not, sir?
Well, I'm just saying the voters of Del Rio will have to live with the decisions they made when electing this person, because there is somebody outright who was effectively saying that Donald Trump was incorrect to close the borders and to speak in a disparaging way about cartels and violence that was coming over the U.S. border. And now the same person is crying on his YouTube channel, hey, we can't handle this, we can't take it, please, please. He wouldn't have said please if it was Donald Trump, right? He wouldn't have said, respectfully, we wish you to pay attention to us, Mr. President. He would have said, F you, get down here right now, you XYZ, right? And now it's, please, please, Mr. Biden, please help us on the border. Biden doesn't care about your border. Biden doesn't care about your border town, and Biden doesn't care about the people live in your town. I hope you get unelected.
Here's what's going to happen. By the way, we had the Homan with Mark Levin last night. Didn't have time to play. We'll try to get to that later in the show or tonight. Homan just says flat out, first time the border in his 35 years of doing this was ever secure was under Donald Trump, right? Things were not absolutely perfect, but man, it's the best we've ever had, right, in an imperfect world. And he said, this is 100% the radical nature of the radicals in the Democratic Party and Biden, those guys that just ripped off, have just taken everything down. ICE can't do anything. Border Patrol can't do anything. It's flooding in here. And now the media is trying to lie for him. Oh, this is overplayed. You think it's overplayed? Look at Martha Raddatz's. Look at her report. Okay. Listen, the guys at MyPillow are the best people, I think, in this country. It's one of the great little companies out there. They pound away every day. Mike Lindell is a warrior. He's got so much more he's going to report coming out in the next couple of weeks. His social media platform, other things he's doing and fighting for what Michelle Bachmann's going to have tomorrow, this entire 5 or 6 hours to actually go through and see the receipts of what happened on November 3rd. Lindell's at the tip of that. We're honored. They're one of our sponsors. Go to MyPillow.com today. Type in the promo code WARROOM Just spend some time there, and you'll see all the great products they got. Remember, support Mike Lindell, support the MyPillow company, and support War Room by going there today and getting up to 66% discounts on everything, or on many things, discounts on everything. Okay, want to pivot now to Andrew Torba, the CEO of Gab. Andrew, and if we can get that, I'm trying to pull that out from the Facebook. Andrew, you put something up on Facebook yesterday I saw, and it was basically, hey, let's cut through the nonsense. Let's get back to an American first agenda. And I want you to go through and maybe start at the border, since that's where we kicked off this segment from. And we're trying to get David Hernandez, the investigative reporter, here later in the show, if we can get free up the time. So, Andrew, you're a technology guy. You're a social media CEO. You've got a great company. You've had some speed bumps, but all the companies have. Why all of a sudden do you lay out an America First agenda that you think we ought to not just be talking about, but acting upon?
Well, Steve, I have a very high level view, and my thumb is really on the pulse of what the people, the working class people in this movement are talking about, the issues that they care about. And I see nobody in the Republican Party talking about these issues aside from maybe DeSantis, right? So I decided to take a list and jot down all of the stuff that all these people on Gab and across the circles that I am privy to are talking about. So it starts with immigration. Immigration is the single most important issue. You guys are just talking about the problem at the border. And what I see over and over again is people want a moratorium on immigration in this country. And what ties pretty much every other issue on this platform that I've developed here ties into it being a pro-God, pro-family platform, right? So when I say things like we need to end foreign wars and bring the troops home, we need to send our troops down to the border. Why are our troops in the Middle East fighting endless wars when we're being invaded on our own border and our own border is unprotected? So that's one of the issues. A lot of the other issues that I outline here are incentivizing small business creation, incentivizing the development of nuclear families, incentivizing women to stay at home and raise their children, incentivizing and encouraging homeschooling. De-incentivizing and pulling federal funding from universities that teach anti-American critical race theory. If we're going to recapture our country, we have to enact this plan. We have to have some sort of platform that people can look to, people who are running, in 2022 and beyond, that they can look to and say, these are the issues that are most important to the people. These are the things that I'm going to talk about. But beyond the federal level, beyond the national level, we need to look at these things at a local level. Why is it and how is it that Drag Queen Story Hour has invaded our libraries? Well, because while we were all distracted by national politics and what's going on in Washington, D.C., we allowed our city councils, we allowed our mayorships, we allowed our school boards to be overtaken and invaded by these leftists with this critical theory and this Marxism. So
let me just ask you a question. Hang on for a second. And didn't the drag queen, it's not something I totally keep up on that closely, but didn't the drag queen guy or one of the co-founders of the drag queen story time that they have in public schools, was he picked up on a child pornography charge a couple of weeks ago?
That was last week. Yes.
So what happened with that individual that had been invited into public schools to lecture its little kids about the drag queen story hour? What happened with him?
Yeah, so from what I understand, he was the president of this organization, and he was picked up on child porn charges, right? And you see these cases happen often, and it's just there's this connection, right? Really strange coincidence with that. But my point in bringing up just that example is, how did these things get into our local communities? Because we allowed it to happen, because we are so distracted as a people with what is going on in Washington, D.C. We don't need permission from Washington, D.C. to govern and to manage and to recapture control of our local communities. This movement needs to be localized. We need to first recapture our own backyards and protect our families in our own backyards. And then we'll focus on scaling that up to D.C. so that we can take back this country. So that's the point of building this platform and outlining all of these things that I'm seeing people on Gab and people over the years, just having a very high level view that most people just do not have, being in my position to say, what are people talking about? What do they care about? And by far, immigration is number one. And number two is pro-family, pro-God policies. Yeah,
hang on 1 second. We're going to take a commercial break. We're going to get your list up and get in the live chat. Raheem Kassam, Stephen K. Bannon, you're in the war room. We'll come back with the CEO of Gab, Andrew Torba, on his punch list of what an America First MAGA agenda should look like. Next in the War Room.
War Room, Pandemic with Stephen K. Bannon.
The epidemic is a demon, and we cannot let this demon hide.
War Room, Pandemic. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
I know we task you with a lot on this show, but remember, we're not here to entertain you, and you're not here to be entertained. You're here about human agency and human action. One of the things we all have to do is boost our immune system. Whether you think the CCP virus, we're going to have Dr. Li Mingyang from Hong Kong University on a little bit later in the show. She's going to talk to you about the investigation that's going on there. Whether you think it's a bioweapon from the CCP or you think this thing's just a total and complete hoax, one thing we have learned in the last year, it's incumbent upon you to take action to boost your immune system. Go to warroomdefense.com, get the War Room Defense Pack. We've got the zinc and the vitamin D3. That's all free, shipping and handling, but you can find out about the rest of the program. And if you think it makes sense for you, sign up. Okay, Raheem Ghassan, before we bring Andrew Torba back in, his punch list, and we're going to get that up on the screen, his punch list of an America First agenda, sir.
Yeah, look, I just wanted to go back to the Drag Queen Story Hour story because we didn't actually get to cover that. It is a pretty big deal given the how many schools and public libraries this thing has been going on at. I mean, the president and CEO of one of these Drag Queen Story Hour organizations across the country was held up, arrested on 7 counts of child pornography last week, uploading images of inappropriate images of young boys. That's what people have been warning about for years with this thing.
But you're a hater.
And called bigots.
But you're a hater.
And haters.
You're a hater.
And all of it.
You're a hater.
And sure enough, it's happened.
Okay. I want to turn now back to Andrew Torba. Andrew, I got to ask you, I see this list, and we'll get the list up, and let's get in the live chat. The list is amazing. You're saying, hey, I can curate this because I'm the CEO of Gab. I see this every day on the platform. This is what people are thinking, so I'm curating this list. The question I got when I see this, are you thinking this thing through now as you've seen all the conversations on Gab and the interactions on Gab and you see where people's hearts are and where they want to fight and what they want to do to save their country? Are you thinking of running for political office?
I am, Steve. It's something that I've been praying about for many years now. And I live in Pennsylvania's 12th congressional district, which is Trump country. It's one of the reddest districts in the entire country. So I'm confident that if and when I decide to run, perhaps in 2022, maybe in 2024, we'll see, that I will win and we will go to Congress and we will go to D.C. With this platform that I have outlined here and work on taking our country back.
So look, the Northeast Pennsylvania, the Scranton area, that's what we focus so much on. That was key to the election. This is where Joe Biden had to go up and sell himself as a faux populist, faux economic nationalist, completely phony. Do you think that this punch list that you just walked through and you put up over the weekend of an America First agenda, do you think that would resonate with the hardworking blue-collar Democrats, hardworking folks up there in Northeast Pennsylvania?
So our office is in northeastern Pennsylvania, but that's actually a separate district. Joe Biden's Scranton area district. These are my people, right? These are the working class blue collar people. Vast majority of them are Trump supporters, regardless of what the media says or what Joe Biden says. So they are in a separate district. I'm a little bit to the left in the 12th district, which is more of a rural Pennsylvania. And it's certainly more red and it's certainly Trump country. And this message and this platform that I've put together would absolutely resonate with them. The question that I have is, you know, we see people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, who gets into Congress, is a woman of the people, is talking about a lot of the things that I outline on this platform. And she's getting, you know, just shot down and attacked left and right. So, but it has to start with one, right? Even if we have one of us, two of us, three of us, and we build on that momentum over time in Congress, that's how we're slowly going to take our country back.
What would you recommend to people, this audience right now, which is an activist audience, if you had one or two things that you think the audience has to do today to start to really drive the narrative forward, drive the football down the field, to take the country back starting in 2022, what would you recommend?
You have to start caring about elections in your own backyard. I think a lot of us, again, are so focused on national politics, are so focused on what's going on in D.C., in presidential politics, that we forget about our own backyard. A lot of us don't even vote in our local elections, and it matters and it's important. So get involved in your own backyard, run for city council, run for mayor, run for the school board, whatever you have to do to get involved in your own backyard and take your own town, city, you know, whatever back. You need to start in your own backyard. That's how we're going to take this country back, is making this a localized movement that then branches up until we, you know, take Congress back and take the country back.
Andrew, how do people get to you? How do they track you?
You can find me on gab.com/A.
Andrew Torba, thank you very much for joining us here in the War Room.
Mr. Thank you, Steve. Pleasure.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've said it for years. Everything's hyper-centralized, hyper-nationalized. That's why when you turn on the TV news every day, they're just talking about what's going on in Washington, D.C. Nobody's talking about the stories that are going on that are arguably way more important all around the country that impact people's lives directly. And it's something that I learned under the political tutelage of Nigel Farage. You know, Nigel would give his national addresses, sure, and he'd appear on national television, sure, but what he was doing in between those, you know, weekly hits was, you know, marching up and down the pavements in the Ramsgates, in the Clactons, in the Grimsbys, in the, you know, the downtrodden, forgotten areas of the country, and understanding from people what mattered to them and why. And predominantly, they were local issues that could be solved locally and by changing local elected politicians that solve those issues.
What led to Brexit, when I went around and met you guys, started following you guys around, you guys were doing this all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
And that's people, great thing. The whole Brexit event came about from the years you guys spent going and making local issues the key of the UKIP and the Brexit movement.
Especially during election time. Even at 9:45 p.m., you know, polls in England close at 10 p.m. Even at 9:45 p.m. on polling day, Nigel would be knocking on people's doors going, "You've got 15 minutes. Can you please go?" And they'd go, "Oh, Nigel, great. Come in for a cup of tea." He'd say, "No, I'm not coming in for a cup of tea. You're going to vote and I'm going next door." And he would just keep doing it. And it's so fundamentally important. I'm glad Andrew's onto that, because that is specifically how the left keeps the talking points on their side of the news debate, which is nationalize, centralize everything.
Action, action, action. Human agency. Okay, we've been talking about action. Somebody that left her country here to come to the West to basically allow us to understand what went on in the Wuhan lab. Dr. Li Minyang from Hong Kong University, formerly of Hong Kong University, a defector, is now in the United States. Dr. Yan, I had to bring you on today, and we're a little jammed for time, although we're going to ask you to stay over the break. You've had this, and by the way, the podcast today, correct me if I'm wrong, and the National Pulse is going to focus on who are you going to focus on?
On Peter Daszak.
And why are you going to focus on Peter Daszak? Just let the audience, maybe some new members who don't know who Peter Daszak is.
Because every single day, we learn more and more compromising information about this supposedly independent World Health Organization COVID origins investigator. You know, compromise on the most basic level that he was handed stipends by the Chinese Communist Party is one thing, but we are finding new details every day. And I finally decided this weekend, I said, hey, we actually need to put together a compendium of all of this information, because this isn't just some guy who took some money once and therefore is compromised out of a situation, which would be bad enough. The guy is actively promoting Chinese Communist Party television media channels right now.
And he is a guy who got money from Fauci for the gain of function experiments, got it into the Wuhan lab, and now he's the head, essentially at least the Western face of the WHO investigation. Is that not correct?
That is absolutely correct.
And he's blaming, for people in this audience, he's blaming you. He's blaming the War Room. He's saying Bannon and his cohorts, and they're so hot talking. He's got Dr. Yan on there. They're hot talking. They're basically saying it's our fault. And that's got Tiger Yang and Xi and Wan Qishan, all of the giants of the Chinese Communist Party. They're so afraid of the War Room that now that's why they won't turn over the data. That's his argument,
that's
correct?
That's the argument.
They're so afraid of the War Room. Of the War Room calling out CCP involvement here and the PLA involvement, that has got Xi has backed off and said, man, that War Room guys, they're lighting us up. We can't turn over data because they've already judged us.
I mean, I want people to understand, we're not embellishing here. We're not saying that, oh, it's because of the political right that we kind of... No, they literally, Peter Daszak literally said, because of what Bannon says on his show, the Chinese Communist Party won't release the data we need to talk about this virus that has cost what now? How many trillions across the world?
Oh, in the $5 to $10 trillion.
Yeah, I mean, on the short term.
Kill a couple million people. Let's turn to Dr. Yan. Dr. Yan, we got a couple of minutes here. We're going to hold you over the break. Dr. Yan, Is Peter Daszak right? Is because of your coming on this show and us saying the Chinese Communist Party is responsible for this, is that why they don't turn over the data? They don't turn over the raw data to the WHO for us to get to the bottom of this?
So, thank you for asking me. I mean, let me briefly explain the logic here. It's basically like the killer. I'm Chinese Communist Party is found to kill people by you and me, and then we tell the world. And the supposed to be the policeman one, Peter Daszak, he blame us that, hey, because you reveal the crime, so the killer get more angry, so they won't let me to investigate the crime. So this is all their logic. And if you see what Rahim and other people reveal online, as I revealed before from the last year, you will see actually Peter Daszak, I mean the policeman, and the killer, Chinese Communist Party, they are the family. They have mutual benefit, and they enjoy get gathering and promote each other. Peter Daszak, bring your U.S. taxpayers' money to China, gave the military civil fusion projects, and developed the unrestricted bioweapon, which is different to the traditional bioweapon, which is very hidden, cunning, and not easy to be defined according to the current law in the West. So that's why they can handle the water.
Yeah, Dr. Yang, just hang on a second. Yeah. We'll take a short commercial break. We're in return with Dr. Li Mingyang from Hong Kong University.
You know, Daszak has to do what he does now. You know why?
Why?
Because if he didn't, he'd be in jail.
Well, I think your podcast will be the kickoff. Daszak's got to understand, you ain't seen nothing yet, bro. We're coming, and we're coming hard, okay? About what your responsibility and accountability for this is, sir. Sorry you don't like it. Sorry, not sorry. We'll return in a minute with Dr. Li Mingyang, formerly of Hong Kong University.
War Room. Pandemic with Stephen K. Bannon.
The epidemic is a demon, and we cannot let this demon hide.
War Room. Pandemic. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Okay, there's going to be a live press conference out in South Dakota on Governor Kristi Noem, and a lot of people are focused on this right now. There's been some confusion over the weekend exactly where she stands on this whole situation about the transgender, really the crushing of women's sports. I know Terry Schilling and the people over APP. We've got Captain Maureen Bannon's all over this. We're going to try to get her in. Kristi Noem is supposed to have a press conference that starts, I think, momentarily. If that happens, we're going to maybe cut away and go to that press conference, because this is very important. Not just the simple fact that Kristi Noem is on the short list of people that are important at this stage, right, in the potential 2024 campaign, particularly if Donald Trump decides, which we hope he doesn't, but if he decides not to run again. But if he does run again, you're going to be looking for, because Mike Pence ain't going to be the VP, you're going to be looking for a vice presidential candidate. She was on the short list with Tim Scott in 2020, where people talking about replacing Mike Pence. Real quickly, Raheem, what's this issue is really engulfed her governorship now. Either miscommunication, misunderstanding, or getting a little weak-kneed?
Look, people are still struggling to figure out what exactly has happened to Kristi Noem here, but she went in very, very heavy on the right side on this women in sports issue, but it's back down significantly over recent weeks, going so far as to say that the rules she was going to introduce, which would protect girls' sports and protect women's sports, yeah, should no longer be applicable in at college level. Yeah. Well, this is where it's most effective for the transgender lobby
And it may be the business community about this whole thing with the NCAA, the woke NCAA may shut this stuff down. Look, she's going to have a press conference. If it starts, we're going to try to go to it. Captain Bannon's got an analysis of it. We don't get to her in this show. We're going to get to her at 5 o'clock tonight. By the way, at 6 o'clock tonight, both Mo Brooks is going to have an event in Huntsville, Alabama. Stephen Miller, the immigration czar under President Trump, will be there to introduce him. Many people anticipate that he is going to be talking about running for the United States Senate as a fire-breathing populist, Trump MAGA. Also, Eric Greitens is in St. Louis. There are rumors he's going on Brett Baer tonight at 6 o'clock. There are rumors that he may be announcing. So two MAGA America First individuals. Okay, we've got the is Kristi Noem at the speaker? Let's tell you, we're going to get back to Dr. Yang in a second, but let's go to South Dakota and Governor Kristi Noem.
I led the fight to protect fairness for girls in the rodeo arena, and when we won in 2018, it was because we approached it in a smart way. I've been very consistent in telling people that I believe the girls should play girls' sports. It's clear that each and every one of us, as men and women, have exceptional gifts and differences. They should be celebrated. But those differences are very real, and the physical differences are very real. Men tend to be stronger. They tend to be faster. Men have different bones, tendons, and ligaments. They also have larger hearts and lung volume, and on and on. And these biological differences lead to very different athletic capabilities. So put simply, it is fundamentally unfair for men to compete in women's sports. And it's a violation of Title IX. Now, Title IX was created to level the playing field between men and women. It was intended to give opportunities to women, to let them to compete and to be successful in college athletics. And it's for this equal opportunity to be fair that girls should play girls' sports. Girls' sports give girls the opportunity to demonstrate their skill, their strength, and their athletic abilities. It also gives girls the opportunity to obtain recognition, to be successful, learn valuable life lessons, and also gain college scholarships or even an athletic career beyond high school and college. So this issue matters to me on a very personal level. I have two daughters that played college sports. They had an opportunity to compete at that level and enjoyed and learned many life lessons from that experience. I played sports in high school, not in college, but I did in high school. Now, if my girls had been playing against men at the college level, their ability to compete would have been dramatically different. In fact, I'm not even sure if they would have been allowed to compete at that level or even qualified to compete if they had even had the opportunity to participate at all. Participating in college sports teaches teamwork, it teaches leadership, work ethic, and grit. And it also develops your talents and your skills. I would not have wanted my daughters to miss the opportunity to learn these life lessons. Now, my daughter Cassidy is pregnant with a baby girl right now. She's going to have a little girl that will be my granddaughter, and I want my granddaughter to have the opportunity that my daughters had. Now, last year at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, my health secretary said to me, Governor, do you want to make decisions that make people feel good, or do you want to do good? And I told her that I wanted to do good. I wanted to make decisions that actually created opportunities for people, kept them healthy, but also gave them the chance to be successful. It's not enough just to say that only girls should play girls' sports. We need to take action that actually does good. And we need to defend Title IX, the legal framework that gives women the opportunity to succeed and to thrive in sports. For months, really since November, my team and I have been talking to well-respected legal scholars at the national level. We've been trying to figure out how to defend women's sports effectively. We didn't want to just take action that would make us all feel good. We want to take action that would actually do good. And we have to do that in a way that we can actually win. We can win the argument, we can win it in court, we can win it nationwide for all of our girls. That legal victory has to be based on Title IX. And our participation trophy just isn't going to cut it. Let's take action that really gives us the result of protecting women's sports. Now, I want to be very palms up with each and every one of you here today. These legal scholars think that South Dakota's chances of winning a lawsuit against the NCAA are very low. The NCAA is a private association. That means they can do what they want to do. And even though I fundamentally disagree with them when it comes to this issue, if South Dakota passes a law that's against their policy, they will likely take punitive action against us. That means they could pull their tournaments from the state of South Dakota. They could pull their home games. They could even prevent our athletes from playing in their league. That's their prerogative. So a fight that doesn't truly protect women's sports and doesn't allow women to compete ultimately is going to hurt South Dakota families. And if the NCAA did take action against the state of South Dakota, we could sue them. I know we could do that. But these respected legal scholars inform me that we would likely lose at that level facing the court circumstances that we have in front of us. So we could pass a law, then we could get punished, then we could face expensive litigation at taxpayer expense, and then we could lose. We'd have nothing but a participation trophy to show for it. Or we could take a different path entirely. So today we're announcing that we're forming a coalition called DefendTitleIXNow.com. The coalition will consist of athletes, leaders, and everybody who cares about protecting women's sports. Once we have enough states on board, a coalition brought big enough where the NCAA cannot possibly punish us all, then we can guarantee fairness at the collegiate level. Here's the pledge that I'm asking all the partners in this coalition to sign. The undersigned agree that Title IX needs to be protected and that we commit to working together to keep fairness in women's sports. We believe that only girls should play girls' sports. Title IX was passed to protect fairness for women. The federal government should enforce Title IX in a way that protects fairness for women's sports, rather than misusing it in a way that undermines fairness. The NCAA and other athletic sanctioning bodies should not take any adverse actions against any state or school that acts to protect fairness for women. That is the pledge that we are asking people as a part of this coalition to sign on to, and we've had many people do so already. We're going to hear from a few of them this morning, and I want to welcome and open it up for Herschel Walker, former NFL football player, to speak with you and share his thoughts today.
Hello, I am Herschel Walker here in Washington, D.C., but I want to thank Governor Doan, who's a great leader, and I want to say that I'm very, very proud to stand with Governor Doan and so many others to protect Title IX and the fairness of women's sports. I made a statement many times ago that women have fought so hard to come so far. By not protecting Title IX, set women by years. So I'm very proud of Governor Noem and so many others to stand and defend Title IX. So I want to thank everyone.
Okay, we're going to stay with this press conference. This is important enough. We're going to stay with this press conference for the duration. Herschel Walker, others are going to be talking. Chrissy Noem is going to come back to the mic. Let's go back to the press conference.
Along with you, who have shown that you're a great leader. And thank you. And to all the women out there, we got to continue to fight for you, for the fairness of women champions in sports. So you have Herschel Walker to sign on with all of you.
That's great. Thank you, Herschel. I appreciate that more than you know. Let's go to Jack Brewer, who is also a former NFL football player, that will share his thoughts on defending Title IX as well. We'll see if we can get Jack up. While we're waiting for Jack to get online, I will read to you Nancy Lopez, the four-time LPGA Player of the Year and a member of both the LPGA Hall of Fame and the World Golf Hall of Fame, her statement that she sent to be read here today. I support Governor Noem and her efforts to defend Title IX. We must protect fairness and for women in sports. When competing in sports, girls should compete against girls and boys should compete against boys. Ever since I was a young girl, I have fought for myself, my three daughters, and all women to have equal opportunity in sports and life. Anything that diminishes Title IX undermines the rights and opportunities of young girls and women all over this country. I want to thank Nancy for sending that, and we'll hear more from her later as well, as she intends to be actively involved in this coalition. Now, let's see, do we have Jack up? Not yet? Okay, so we're going to move to our next speaker, and we'll keep Jack for the end. The next speaker that we're going to have up come up and share will be McKenna Prouty, and I'll let her introduce herself.
Hello, my name is McKenna Prouty. I would like to thank Governor Noem for giving us the chance to be heard at this press conference. First, I would like to say that I am proud to have the individual and unique gifts that I have as a female. And second, that what I have to say is in no way meant to disrespect the transgender community. As a female, I do ask for the same respect in return. Growing up, I had two dreams: to become a medical doctor and to participate in collegiate sports. I have been accepted in the fall to begin my quest for both of these dreams. As a female, I can compete with any male scholastically or when it comes to becoming a medical doctor. But if we are to be truthful, it is a biological fact I cannot compete fairly with males at my level. For instance, my family consists of two girls and two boys. I am the oldest. Early on, my brothers rarely beat me in any competition. But as we became teenagers, I watched them become bigger, faster, and stronger. It is a simple fact. Dreams like these take hard work, dedication, and perseverance. Nobody wants to go into a competition knowing that they will only have the chance for second place. With that being said, we are asking for a fair playing field where we all have the chance to become a champion. I'm asking those of you who have the ability to make these decisions to consider truth, fact, and science, and the dreams of your children and your grandchildren. I respectfully thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks, McKenna. Next, I'm going to introduce Victoria Blatchford, who's going to come up and share some of her thoughts and feelings on Title IX. Thank you, Governor Noel. I'm happy to be here to not only represent women in sports, particularly the sport of rodeo, but also as a working professional woman who is a mother to two kids, a boy and a girl that both rodeo, and we just finished rodeoing out in Rapid City for Little Britches Rodeo. Our 4-H rodeo is a big part of our life. I grew up 4-H rodeoing, and my daughter did, and my son did. And it's important that with 5 years difference between the two, they had that opportunity to be able to develop and grow in their own each individual way. Carolyn, she went on to be the state 4-H rodeo ambassador and did girls breakaway. JJ, John, he did the flag race and the goat tying. Now goat tying is one event that you could have both boys and girls do it, but they do it differently because their abilities are different. And Governor Noem, if you had not gone to the national level and said and spoke up for what's right for our children, for our boys and our girls, particularly making sure that Title IX girls have the opportunity to compete and excel in the efforts that they have, I just think that it was phenomenal, and we wouldn't have been able to do that without you. So thank you again. You made a difference. And is continuing to make a difference by making this initiative happen. Now, I also come to you as a national board member of the National Little Britches Rodeo Association. So with Little Britches, we have what we call Little Wranglers. Little Wranglers are ages 5 through 8. They compete boys and girls. And in order for them to be able to compete at that level, they're very much equal. But as we grow into ages 8, they start to develop. And if you've been involved with rodeo as long as I have, you've seen that development from the Little Wranglers all the way up to the seniors, now into the college level and professional level. But at age 8, we separate them out to ages 8 and above for boys and girls events. And it works really, really well because you can see the distinct difference between their competitiveness and their abilities, that women and men have separate abilities, as you've already spoken to. But I just want to reiterate that we thank you, Governor Noem, and the coalition to be able to move forward with this and make a difference for us. Thank you. Thank you, Victoria. We are going to go next to Don Reichert. Don, would you like to come up and share?
Thank you, Governor Noem.
As a past alumni of South Dakota State University, I rodeoed in high school in the late 50s and early 60s, and SDSU in the mid 60s. I think that what we're talking about here, the differences, as Victoria has mentioned, in young children are not there. But as you get into high school, the big differences really show up in the abilities that men and women have to compete in rodeo events and so on. I go back to about the late 80s, mid to late 80s, and Title IX was important to our family. Our daughter competed in gymnastics, and we had some things that happened that we were able to utilize Title IX and straighten some things out. So I thank Governor Noem for her support on ladies competing in sports and not having men to compete against them, where their abilities are a lot different and they can compete and beat them and end up with our young ladies being in second place rather than first place when they compete with other people. So thank you, Governor Noem, for having us here and supporting this.
Thank you, Don. Appreciate that. Next, we will have Madison Bolwick, who will come up and share.
Thank you, Governor Noem. I would just like to say I appreciate and applaud Governor Noem's efforts in ensuring a level playing field for women in sports. I come from a high school sport background with four different sports, And I would just like to say thank you very much for your efforts in ensuring a level playing field.
Thank you, Madison. And next, Madison Sheehan will come up.
Hello, I'm Madison Sheehan. I recently moved to the state of South Dakota to come here and work for Governor Noem, and I asked her if I could share my personal thoughts on this issue. I was a graduate of The Ohio State University, where I had the opportunity to row there and be a part of two Big Ten championship teams. Most people don't know, but rowing is the Title IX equivalent to football. 25 years ago, Ohio State had the opportunity to add another program. They chose to have a rowing program at The Ohio State University. If it wasn't for that decision 25 years ago, I might not have the opportunities to do what I did in college. I want every woman and every girl in the United States and in the great state of South Dakota to have the opportunity to play just like I did. It's helped me in my career, allowed me to learn qualities like hard work, dedication, being a part of a team. And if I didn't have those opportunities to play from a very young age and moving on to be able to be a part of the team in college, I might not be here today being able to work for the governor. So I fully support this, and I hope that we're able to do this. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you. That's great. And last, we're going to go to Jack Brewer, former NFL football player.
Hello, I'm Jack Brewer, former University of Minnesota team captain and three-time NFL team captain. I am so proud to stand with Governor Kristi Noem as she defends Title IX and defends girls' sports as we know it. Women fought so hard for Title IX, and I know that thousands of athletes around the country agree with me. Governor Noem, we have your back. Thank you for standing for us. Thank you for being a voice, and hopefully people around this nation rally around this cause. This coalition will do so much for so many young girls growing up who are pursuing their dreams in sports. We all know this is the right thing to do. And Governor Noem, thank you again for your amazing leadership.
So again, I think there's been a lot of conversation around this issue, different bills that are moving through legislatures across the country. And for years, I've worked to defend Title IX and the equal opportunities for women. I think that we need to continue to do that, but do it in a smart, strategic way that ensures that we don't cut off opportunities for women, that we actually keep them open and help them be more successful in all the policies that the NCAA, the NAIA, and all other leagues and associations have and embrace far into the future. So with that, I will open it up to any questions that you may have. Yes.
Governor, this has been so far not just a problem, it's not true. Why is this a priority for you?
Well, it is a very existent issue in South Dakota because a lot of people are talking about it and concerned about it. And they see the trends that are happening across the country and that we could, in the near future, have a situation where we are dealing with it on a daily basis in South Dakota. So what I propose to the legislature, hopefully they will consider that they will protect women's sports in the K-12 system and that we'll continue to build this coalition so we can protect them at the collegiate level as well. Yes.
Jacob Sosman with Dakota News Now. So between the tweet of you saying you want to send this bill, mm-hmm. and you will send this bill, to you eventually not signing the bill, is that simply because what you're stating today is the NCAA and the fear that they will take the Summit League and others out of South Dakota?
I'm still excited to sign the bill. Nothing's changed. But looking at the bill, after it came to my desk with my general counsel and other legal scholars and looking at it, which we do with every piece of legislation that reaches my desk, we saw some of the things that needed to be corrected with it and can do that through a style and form revision. Some of those portions of the bill that we need to fix are those that create a trial lawyer's dream. There are incredible opportunities for lawsuits and litigation in this bill that don't need to be there. There's reporting requirements for families that tens of thousands of families would have to comply with each and every year that would be an administrative burden on those families and on the schools. So those revisions would be incredibly helpful to make sure that we have integrity in the program and that we're able to protect women's sports here in South Dakota.
Governor Noem, the verbiage didn't stop at birth certificate. You added affidavit, which means a young woman, transgender, could go and plead before the court to have the birth certificate change the gender. Why was that added?
What I'm proposing is that they be able to use the birth certificate at the time of birth and a legal document that would state what the birth certificate says at the time of birth. What the current bill says that was put on my desk is that every year that parent and family would have to prove that that boy was a boy and that that girl was a girl. They also would have to state that they are free from any kind of performance-enhancing drugs, yet there's no definition for performance-enhancing drugs in this legislation, which leaves it open to all different kinds of interpretation. It could be hormones, it could be steroids, it could be your multivitamin. It's not defined, therefore the litigation aspects of this bill are far-reaching and could be, bring big consequences onto families and our school districts.
Governor?
Yes?
Some lawmakers have charged that the style of form veto in this way it does not conform to the Constitution. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that? Is this overstepping the role of your office?
The Constitution says specifically that a style and form revision is whatever the legislature says it is. So if they choose to accept the style and form revision, it is appropriate and it is the right thing to do. It's up to their definition of what they choose to accept.
Defend Title IX now. Does the state of South Dakota standing this up? And do you have support from other governors in other states yet? Who signed this so far?
It's a coalition of people that will be athletes, professional athletes like the ones you've heard from today, but more beyond that, collegiate and high school. I'd invite everybody to go to the website, sign up to be a part of this coalition, share it with all your social media platforms because we want more people to be involved. There are also other leaders. I'll be asking other governors to stand up and to support me in this coalition and building this agreement on defending Title IX and also attorney generals. I think it's incredibly important we get attorney generals involved as well. So I've spoken with many governors already. We've got a couple of them that have said that they're supportive and will be a part of the coalition, and I'm glad for that.
So you